Hey, what's up? Hello. Welcome to Sounds Fake But Okay, a podcast where an arrow ace girl, I'm Sarah, that's me.
And a bi-demisexual girl, that's me, Kayla.
Talk about all things to do with love, relationships, sexuality, and pretty much anything else we just don't understand.
On today's episode, compulsory sexuality.
Sounds fake, but okay. Welcome back to the pod.
Hello.
I hope all of our Americans had a good long weekend last week.
Yes.
I hope the rest of you had a good regular weekend, unless you also had a long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to move on. Do we have any housekeeping?
Buy our book.
Buy our book. Yep. Soundsfakepod.com/book.
It is now available at a lot of indie stores. So if you go to IndieBound, is it .org?
Just go to IndieBound.
Yeah.
You can also go to bookshop. I think that one's also .org.
But if you go to IndieBound, you can put in your zip code and it'll show you the indie stores near you that are offering the pre-order on their online websites. And you can buy it from there so you can support your local bookstores. Or bookshop.org donates money to indie bookstores.
Yes. And if you're like, I very specifically want to support Sarah and Kayla's favorite bookstore, you should get it from Literati Bookstore in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yes. True. That is our favorite bookstore.
Just very saying.
Yeah. So true.
All right. Great. Kayla, what are we talking about this week?
This week, we are talking about the first ace book that is coming out in this
ace book season.
Yeah, in this ace book season, which is Refusing Compulsory Sexuality, A Black Asexual Lens on Our Sex-Obsessed Culture by Sharonda J. Brown.
Ooh, we love Sharonda in this house.
Yes. The book comes out
September
13th. But you could still pre-order it right now so that it's ready for you right when it comes out.
Yeah, we have it. It's very nice. It's a very nice book.
It is. The cover is very pretty. It's good stuff.
Very excellent. So originally, Sharonda's people reached out to us at their publisher. The original intention was to have Sharonda on the pod, but then their schedule changed and the availability changed and it became no longer possible. But we still really wanted to talk about this book, so we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, we're going to be doing episodes on like all of the ace books coming out in this season. So yeah, it's a very good book, so we obviously didn't want to not cover it just because Sharonda was busy. So
yeah, and their publisher still said, hey, we'll send it to you. Go ahead, talk about it. We're free advertisement. And we said, yep.
True. We are also working with Sharonda's publisher to do a little giveaway.
Yes, we are.
So if you head over to our Instagram, we are giving away 5 copies of Sharonda's book.
5! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5!
So yeah, head over to our Instagram and you can see how to apply to win. International and U.S. residents are, what's the word, eligible. So anyone could get one.
Yes, it's a really good book. I'm super excited that we're able to give 5 away. So get on that, folks. Instagram at SoundsFakePod.
Yeah, I'm thinking we'll probably
the eligibility requirements.
We'll probably run it for like a week. So you have a week to enter, but might as well just do it now before you forget. So
yeah, because if you're like me, you're going to forget.
So true.
Okay, so this book, Kayla and I have both read it.
Yeah.
Let's discuss. This is like a little book club.
Yeah, this really is. This is like us doing a book report for you. We don't want to spoil too much. Like, we're going to try not to read like too many quotes from a book because it's not out yet, obviously.
Yeah, I want to be clear that, like, listening to this episode is not a substitute for reading the book. Like, I would really recommend reading the book. There's so much in the book that we could not possibly get to in this episode, and things that me and Kayla just can't speak to nearly as well, or at all, but nearly as well as Sharonda can. So, honestly, this book is really good. Just get the book.
Just get it. Yeah, it's definitely, like, compared to the one other comparison we really have of, like, recent Ace books compared to Ace by Angela Chen, it is, I would say,
I thought you were going to say our own book.
Yeah, our own. No, it is slightly, I would say, like, denser than Ace, more research and academia focused than Ace by Angela Chen.
It takes a more traditionally academic approach.
Yeah. So
than Ace does, than our book does.
Yeah, so definitely be ready for it to, like, not be a light or quick read. It's definitely, like, something you want to sit and absorb and really think about as you read.
Mm-hmm.
But
it would be really good for queer studies and feminist studies classes. Just saying, let's get those required readings in for Sharonda.
Yeah. Honestly, a thought that I had so often while reading this is, like, why, like, stuff I learned in this book about, like, Black history specifically and how it relates to gender, I was like, why was this not covered in my women's studies and gender classes? Like, this seems like the basics that I should have been learning. Like, I should not have been learning it from this book.
It's great that you did, but you should have learned it before then.
Yes, which is obviously partly my fault for not doing my own reading on my own, but nevertheless.
Yeah. Kayla, as you know, I am very anti book abuse. Book abuse being anything that harms the perfect pages of a book. But because, like, this, it reminded me so much of college reading this, like, in a good way, not in a bad way, that, like, I actually did mark it up and I, like, underlined stuff and I told Kayla this and she was like, wow, this is shocking.
And it honestly is. Sarah's very passionate about the care of her books, so.
Yeah. But this, it felt in the best way possible, like I was doing reading for an interesting class in school.
Yes.
So I was like, I gotta mark this down.
Yes. I have a lot of little tabs in mine from, like, parts that I found particularly interesting. So, as the title states, the book is about compulsory sexuality from a Black asexual lens. So, just to kind of give my best overview of, like, what the book covers, it is really Sharonda looking at compulsory sexuality, obviously, which is, I feel like, kind of a sister to, like, amatonormativity and allonormativity, which we talked about a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, they're all connected.
Yeah, it's basically the idea that everyone is having sex and that it is normal and, like, a human need, that it is just kind of a given.
And then that it's what you're supposed to do. Not just that, yeah, that, like, it's a given, but also that if you don't do it, you are doing something wrong.
Yeah. So throughout the book, Sharonda kind of goes through a lot of different topics through each chapter about, like, desire, like, the history of the word frigidity, about medical history, gender, like, productivity and capitalism, through both an asexual and Black lens, and looking at how those topics kind of impact both ace and Black people, mm-hmm, and people who are both Black and ace specifically. Mm-hmm. It talks a lot about really kind of broad, like, structural powers, like white supremacy or capitalism, like, broad societal things, and talking about kind of how those were built through anti-Blackness. And so how those, mm-hmm, obviously hurt Black people, but how in parallel it's having a lot of the very similar effects on ace people.
Yeah, it really struck me, especially when I was reading the introduction of the book, about how everything Sharonda was talking about compulsory sexuality and this idea of how a heteronormative society benefits from remaining a heteronormative society, which is something we touch on in our book as well. It really struck me, and Sharonda laid it out so well in a very clear and concise way and brought all the receipts, that these same ideas that we think about as a spec issues and compulsory fill in the blank it maps so clearly onto whiteness and white hegemony. How would you describe hegemony for the kids?
What is the definition of hegemony?
I was like, wait, I should. That's not the most accessible word.
Like, I know what it means in my heart, but I don't actually know what it means.
Leadership or dominance, especially by one country or social group over others. Sometimes it's pronounced hegemony, depending on who you ask.
Sure.
Or maybe that was just my professor. but these same ideas that affect A-specs, they map so cleanly and clearly onto white hegemony. And as a white A-spec, it's not something that I often think about because I'm not forced to confront my whiteness on a day-to-day basis in the same way that I'm forced to confront my Aero aceness, in the same way that Black people or other people of color are forced to confront their quote unquote otherness compared to what the social norm is. And so it just made me think of a lot of things. And I was like, it's so easy to map one onto the other. And it's so clear to see how they're so inextricably intertwined, but we just don't often talk about them that way.
Yeah, 100%. I think the book did a really good job of laying out like exactly why it is so difficult to be a Black A-spec person. Like, obviously, it is easy to just know that as a fact. Like, being a Black person is harder than being a white person, obviously. But to see it laid out so clearly of, like, here is why. Here are the structures in place that make that a fact.
Right.
Is just, yeah, it's just makes it really easy to understand and digest.
Yeah, it drew explicit connections and distinct connections between this is the discrimination that asexuals face, this is the racism and discrimination that Black folks face, and this is the way that those things compound together for Black aces and Black ace specs.
Yeah, I think it really gets the idea of kind of like double jeopardy, which is the idea of like having two minority identities and how those kind of compound each other. It gets at that really clearly. There's a lot of the book in general talks more about female or assigned female at birth or assumed female A-specs and Black A-specs. And so it talks a lot about kind of the dichotomy of the over-sexualized Black woman and then being asexual and how kind of that is viewed as an impossibility. Like, how could a Black woman be asexual if they are supposed to be this hypersexual person?
Yeah, the Jezebel stereotype. Yeah.
So there's like a lot of discussion on the interactions between gender, the interactions between just like the stereotypical Black person and how it can make being a Black asexual person seem very impossible to both white people or to other Black people that have just kind of been conditioned to think a certain way, as we all have.
Mm-hmm. Something that was really interesting that Sharonda talks about throughout is this idea that so many sexologists, psychologists, people who, you know, studied this in like the 1800s, a lot of them were German. Why were there so many Germans?
Who's to say?
Maybe that's just the best documented. But there was just this kind of overwhelming thought that asexuality and that a lack of this certain attraction is related to an immaturity, because, you know, like kids, whatever, before they go through puberty. And it was so strongly connected to this idea of maturity that someone even at one point said that, like, where was it? Freud, Sigmund Freud, famed motherfucker.
I hate that guy.
I wrote this down because I was so shook. He called clitoral orgasms immature, despite the fact that 75% of people with vaginas can't orgasm without that.
Freud really was a motherfucker.
He really was a motherfucker. And there were just so many things sort of just like sprinkled throughout about asexuality is immature and not having these, and, you know, to reach maturity, to reach adulthood, to be a proper adult, you need to have this attraction and these experiences. And there was an interesting point about how not only can are Black folks not seen as being able to be asexual because they're supposedly hypersexual with the Jezebel stereotype and that sort of thing, but they're also adultified at such a young age. And because asexuality is seen by so many as this liminal space on the way to adulthood, a lot of people are like, oh, that doesn't comport with my understanding of Blackness. And that was such an interesting thing that I just hadn't connected those dots before.
Yeah, that whole chapter, there's kind of a chapter that I want to talk about more about just kind of like timing and life stages in general. And again, it was just one of those things where the way Sharonda wrote it and kind of brought in all of this evidence made it so clear to me. Like the whole book I was reading, like, why did I never like, how could I never have put this together myself? Like, it's so clear the way that they put it together.
Yeah. And that's on white ignorance.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, yeah, that's, yeah, I should not be feigning ignorance for like, oh my God, why didn't I put it together? Like, obviously.
No, but you know, it's the fact that we haven't put it together is representative of the society that we live in and what we are taught to value as white people. So.
No, true. But also, like, I don't want to take the blame away from myself. Like,
oh, certainly. Certainly not.
reading this whole book just made it so clear to me that, like, I have so much more reading to do. Yeah. But it also got me very excited to do it. So like it's very motivational in that way. But yeah, kind of the discussion of like the adultification of asexual women especially, but then kind of the like the childification that is put on asexual or not asexual. Well, yes, asexual people, but like Black adults of that stereotype of like, oh, they need a white savior. They can't do anything themselves. And so, and again, so how complicated it then makes for someone who has both an asexual and Black identity.
Yeah, and something that Sharonda discussed as well was the fact that so many of these things, these expectations around Black folks, around Black aspects, around aspects in general, are so contradictory and they don't make sense. And it just made me think about how, you know, everything is so conflicting because everything is about maintaining power and control. And depending on the context, that might mean over white women, over asexuals. But it also means, you know, maintaining power and control over Black people, over any other group. And this social view of asexuality changes to fit that narrative. There were times when white women being asexual was like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. But then in another context, it was like, oh, well, it's okay. And it's just so clear to me how the context, depending on the context, anything changes just to serve white hegemony.
Yeah, there was, I forget what the exact quote is, and it was referenced several times in the book, but I have no idea where it was. But there was a quote about how anti-Blackness is just like the willingness and ability to just like misunderstand the world or like misinterpret the things going on around you just for your own benefit, just to like look at what is around you and just decide to be completely delusional. And it's kind of that idea of like just changing your mind about what the standards are just to meet whatever you need to do to keep the higher, whatever group is in power right now, to keep them in power.
Right. And something else that I found interesting and apt was part of the fear of white asexuality specifically is it comes from the fear of white genocide, of the idea of losing the majority, of if these people aren't bearing white children, that is a threat to white supremacy, and that is a threat to white hegemony. And that's part of the reason why asexuality for some people was so scary, is because they didn't want to lose that power. And they felt, okay, well, if there aren't enough white women having white babies because they don't you know, feel this attraction, they don't want to be involved in these relationships, that's a problem.
I will tell you what, along these lines, there is a section, I think it must be in the chapter that's like about gender, or maybe the chapter that's like about productivity. But it kind of talks about that idea of like the fear of white genocide, and it talks about reproductive health too. And which is obviously very topical right now. And it just talked about like why there is so much government control over having babies and why there is so much like anxiety right now about like the population rate not, you know, being the same and like the loss of workers. It was just so...
The COVID baby boom.
Yeah. It was, again, it's just so
or the COVID baby bust. Together. There's no boom. Bust. Sorry.
just the way Sharonda writes it and brings all this evidence together makes it so clear of like just kind of the ideas that might be in the back of your head of like, oh man, like the government's doing something shady or like there is a higher power kind of at work. Like it just makes that so clear.
It's all about maintaining power and control, and everything boils down to that, whether it has to do with compulsory sexuality, whether it has to do with race, whether, I mean, those two things often have to do very much with each other. They're very connected. But everything comes down to that connection between power and who has it and who maintains it. And it pisses me off.
Yeah, I should hope so. Oh, I remembered I was on the track to talk about this earlier and then we went off somewhere. But throughout the book, Sharonda talks about this concept called chrononormativity, which I really want to do like a whole episode on because I think it's another normativity that we can really get into. But it's this idea that I think the writer Elizabeth Freeman maybe coined the word or just did a lot of writing on it. But it's the notion that our lives and the experiences within them are set to unfold in a particular pattern. And this pattern is one that is determined by the social and cultural mandates of the era in which we live. So the idea of like, by this age, you should be married. At this age, you go to school. At this age, you like have a baby, get your first job, buy a house, whatever, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so interesting to read about, because obviously you can see how easily how that applies to asexual people or aromantic people of like, okay, we're less likely to maybe have sex for the first time or at all, or like not getting married and stuff. But Sharonda also lays out kind of just the white supremacy behind chrononormativity. There was a part where they talk about how the concept of having three meals a day is like a European colonial concept.
It's all colonialism.
Had just never crossed my mind that like, oh yeah, like why? That's weird. It's not a given that humans eat like three round meals a day. So it's even like granular stuff like that that is just like, damn, it really makes you think.
Yeah. On page 64.
Of our copy, at least. I don't know.
Of our copy.
If the other copies are different.
Sharonda says, traditional, parentheses, read, colonial, end parentheses, which that's such a correct way to think about it, is tradition is all in Western. I mean, a lot of this book was very much based in U.S. history, in U.S. The American story of it all. And everything that is quote-unquote traditional is colonial.
Yeah, there's a lot in the book that kind of talks about, obviously, slavery, but also kind of like the American takeover of what becomes the United States and how a lot of kind of the anxieties around anti-blackness and also anti-aspec comes from the idea of like setting apart the white man from the quote-unquote savage. Which is what like historians and like doctors were saying back then, which is obviously truly horrendous.
Yikes.
But yeah, I think that is a lot of where that compulsory sexuality comes from, is this like want to be the higher race. And so we need to kind of control our sexuality in a specific way that is also very hypocritical in an incredible amount of ways.
Yeah, and so many other cultures and communities that were not white European, they did not necessarily have the same delineations and the same binaries and the same heteronormativity that white Christian Europeans did. But, you know, it's colonialism. Those were the people that kind of seized control and enforced these things on all these other peoples. And anything that did not fit their mold was seen as somehow savage or wrong. And that only enforces cis heteronormativity even more. Cis heteronormativity is in some ways a white invention.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, you think about like the concept of a two-spirit person from mm-hmm. Native people. You can see how white supremacists and colonialists came in and saw that and were like, well, since you do it, it must be bad because we've decided we're better than you. And so we're just mm-hmm. going to wipe all of that out and set us back so many years.
So far. Yeah. Foolish. Foolish.
This is mostly unrelated, but I read today that, like, back in the day when they made man plus man relationships illegal in, mm-hmm. Like, the UK, I think.
Sodomy?
Yes. They decided to not make, like, woman-love-woman relationships illegal because they didn't want to give women ideas. They thought that if they just didn't tell women that it was possible to be with another woman, that they, like, wouldn't figure it out. And apparently there's, like, parliament transcripts where you can read them being like, no, you guys, we shouldn't do this because they'll figure it out.
You don't want to suggest it.
This is really related to nothing, but I just thought about it because we were talking about the colonials.
Jesus. There was also some interesting facts in there about how studies have shown that of all the queer identities, asexuals are the most likely to have been offered or forced into conversion therapy, and how there's a racial split that is distinct, that not only are asexuals more likely, but there is a clear demarcation that Black asexuals and asexuals of color are more likely than white asexuals to be forced into or at least offered conversion therapy, which is not unsurprising, but it's interesting to see it laid out so clearly.
Yeah, it's interesting to see it like in the numbers, what we can kind of assume is true just based on what is happening around us.
And the studies also show that asexuals are the most hated of the queers.
Yeah, that one was wild to me. There's a good amount in the book that's just kind of about like public perception of asexuality, mm-hmm. and those studies were incredibly interesting.
It's so fascinating to me because I don't often think of aspects as the most hated, because to be hated, we have to be known.
Yeah, same.
But when we are known, we are hated.
Yeah. I didn't think we were like people knew enough to have that much hate. But yeah, there's kind of going along with that, there's kind of a whole chapter about like the dehumanization of asexuals along with Black people. And there's a lot of kind of historical work that's discussed there of like the history of what it takes for a person to be dehumanized and what that means kind of socially. It's super interesting.
There's two different types of dehumanization. There's the animalization and there's the robotization.
Uh-huh.
And they're distinct from each other and they're used differently.
Yeah. There's also a lot of really amazing just asexual history in the book. In I think the second to last chapter.
Oh
yeah, it's just a timeline. Yeah. There's like two chapters in this book, that the history one and then one that talks about kind of, I mean, throughout the whole book, really just kind of laying out asexuality as a queer identity. That like if someone ever came up to you and was like, asexuality isn't part of the LGBT, you could like pull out this book and be like, oh, really? Because here's all this history and all this evidence.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really cool. It goes back like centuries.
It starts in 1855.
Yeah. showing like the major historical like writings and events that include asexuality, which is
wild. I said earlier something about how a lot of the people who were contributing to this were German or they were German speakers. And I was like, why? I actually do have a theory of why.
Is it the Nazis?
No.
Oh, that's
good. Why'd you bring them into this?
I don't know, because they did a lot of like really harmful medical work.
Yeah, but not. I'm talking the 1800s.
Oh, okay.
They did. You are correct.
Sorry.
And like the Aryan race, and yes, yes. But personally, this is just opinion, a hypothesis, if you will. I think that just goes to show that white Eurocentric histories, first of all, they're simply better known and studied, but also, I think it could mean that the differentiation between the sexualities, which is enforced the sexual binary, again, it goes along with the fact that it's a white invention.
Yep. It's
not happening elsewhere, or it's not being documented elsewhere, because it's not such a big conversation. And so when you look through the history that Sharonda lays out, which is super interesting and detailed, and I learned so much, and if for no other reason, buy the book for this history section. But there are lots of other reasons to buy the book. It was interesting that kind of in the 1800s section, it was mostly Germans. And then early 1900s, it kind of switches to the Americans. And I just thought that was interesting. It is partially because Sharonda is American. That's the bias that we have as well. That's what we're familiar with. But it is interesting that that's where so much of the discourse is happening, and it's happening openly. You could say that that's also because freedom of speech in the United States. People can have these conversations and can talk about them, and they're documented well. But it's just people had some thoughts. Some of them were right. Some of them were wrong.
I think a lot of them were wrong.
A lot of them were wrong, but there was one German woman who several times I was like, you're right.
You're right for that.
I believe her name is Emma. It really does just point out that the term asexual was used in queer circles so much earlier than people think it was.
Yeah.
Like, I had heard of it being used on occasion in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, same.
But the first mention here in the United States of referring to people as asexual in the way that we sort of understand it now, obviously it's not totally the same. 1914.
That is wild.
It's absurd. Magnus Hirschfeld. Hirschfeld. Oh. Magnus Hirschfeld said that they can distinguish among five groups: heterosexuals, homosexuals, bisexuals, apparent asexuals, and auto-monosexuals.
Well, there you go. There we are.
1917, another mention.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to give away the entire book.
Sorry, I just found it so... I was just like, it was mentioned by name so much earlier than I realized.
Yeah. Another part of the book I liked, I think it was like the very last chapter, was just like quotes from Black asexuals, just about their experience as Black asexuals, which I really love. Like our book, Eris Young's book, which we'll be talking about in a couple weeks, and Sharonda's book all have these like quotes from asexual people. Like I really like that we all kind of went in that direction. But it was just very interesting to get perspectives, like more perspectives, instead of just Sharonda's.
From a diversity of Black asexual voices. Because, you know, as Sharonda talks about in this book, is there is little Black aspec representation, and of that representation, it tends to be a couple people. And so you hear these same perspectives, and those perspectives are great and they're helpful and they're wonderful to hear from, but it's also good to just hear more and hear about other people's experience. So it was great to just read about so many people's experience. Some of the names I recognized, some of them I didn't.
Yeah. There's also like throughout the book, there's some like mini interviews or just contributions from like mm-hmm. other Black A-spec, like historians or researchers or sexologists and stuff like that. And it was really cool that that was included too.
Yeah. There's also a whole section that talks about the assumption, when people claim that historical figures, often writers, Sharonda talked specifically about Octavia Butler and Langston Hughes as historical figures who were kind of obfuscated around their sexuality. They never clarified what they were or weren't. And as a result, people assumed they were gay, or in the case of Octavia Butler, gay as in lesbian. And how that's often just not based in fact, but people just see, okay, this person is not hetero, therefore they must be gay. And they don't view asexuality, aspec identities as an option, even if there's a lot of evidence. And in both the cases of Langston Hughes and Octavia Butler, a lot of evidence is discussed, especially with Octavia, where she at different times said, I don't think I'm a lesbian. Like,
yeah.
And she said things that today are very clearly, could be very clearly interpreted as asexual. And there was just this discussion of how aspec identities are not seen as an option, even amongst queer people. And we kind of enforce certain sexualities onto people because we want to see them. And I understand that you want to feel represented by someone, but there's often no space for ambiguity, and there's no space for aspec identities in that. And that's the problem in and of itself.
Yeah, I really, really liked that chapter. There's like, so again, so much history that's brought in, and like experts on the topic that are brought in to talk about it, and just like historical evidence. That was a really cool chapter.
I feel like we've kind of just been jumping around the book like excited children.
Yeah.
Being like, and this part I loved, and this part I loved,
and this part, and then and, this happened.
And then this. But I do want to emphasize, like, I'm sure you guys can tell by the fact that me and Kayla are just like, I loved this. Now, like, this is a really excellent book, and it's very informative, and it's very educational, and it will make you, even if you are, feel like you're the most informed person in the world, like, it will give you things to think about, and it will make you think about your own place in all of it. And I would just really recommend this book. I can't say that enough. No one's paying me to say this. No one's telling me to say this.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, anyone who is not Black especially should be reading this.
Yeah.
I hope we are not putting off any energy that, like, either of us know really what we're talking about. We're kind of just regurgitating excitedly what we read. I think that that kind of also clearly states our ignorance, and that we have a lot more research to do. But I will say that, like, as someone who, like, struggles to find good research, or sometimes struggles to know, like, the right thing to do, or what I can do to help the asexual community be more diverse, I think this book is a really good start for that if you're feeling lost. Like, I definitely personally feel a lot more informed. I feel like I have a lot better of an idea of, like, what to do, what to look for, what to, like, read more of. Yeah.
Yeah. I, in the foreword, which is written by Hess Love, in the very first sentence, they say that they refer to Sharonda as a conjurer, and I wholeheartedly agree. Sharonda created something that we hadn't had yet, but that we needed so badly. And so I think this book is so important, and especially if you are not Black, especially if you are white specifically, it is a very important read and a very good read.
Yes.
I will end on saying this one thing, which is that I took a bunch of notes on my phone when I was doing this. And one of my favorite notes that I took is, I am a frigid bitch. So true.
Sarah has regurgitated that note to me several times, so clearly she's very proud of it.
I'm a frigid bitch. So listen, it's the way it is. There's a whole chapter about frigidity, which was so interesting. In conclusion, every chapter was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't know how much real content came out of this. This was really just kind of book club hours. So maybe you should come back and listen to this after you read it. I don't know.
Yeah, and then just talk back at us.
At us.
We won't be able to hear you.
This was really just recorded book club time between Kayla and Sarah. But like Sarah said in the beginning, this is absolutely no substitute to reading the book. Sarah and I clearly are not experts and have, like, you know, no right to be speaking on this topic, really. So definitely read it.
Indeed.
Again, the title is Refusing Compulsory Sexuality, A Black Asexual Lens on Our Sex-Obsessed Culture. Again, would recommend buying from a local indie bookstore if you can.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you can go to others if you must, but, you know.
Yeah.
Or get it from our giveaway. Head over to our Instagram.
So true.
You could get a free one.
You could get a free one. And then when you've also bought one for yourself, you can give one to a friend because you have two now.
Exactly.
Give one to your mom. All right. Kayla, what is our poll for this week?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Are you buying Sharonda's book? Yes. Or
yes. Or no, I'm stinky.
No, I'm stinky. Or the fourth option, no, because of financial reasons or because of my own safety, but I'm interested and I want to get it in the giveaway.
It's a very long answer, but okay.
Yeah, that's a really long answer. Figure it out.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Wonderful. Again, at SoundsFakePod on Instagram, enter the giveaway. You can get one for free. Yep.
Yep.
Kayla, what is your beef and your juice this week?
Wow, imagine us remembering to do beef and juice. let's see. My beef is that I fell down my stairs today.
Mm.
The stairs in my new home are very bad. They are very slippery because they have like landlord special paint over them.
Mm.
And also they're like rounded. So I was carrying both my cats down the stairs today, and then I because they needed to come downstairs, and then I slipped and slid down many of the stairs, and I skinned my elbows.
Oh no, not the
elbows. It was not fun.
That's sad.
My juice is that I got a rug, and it's the type of rug that's like a play mat, like the ones you would drive cars on. Yeah, it was in the IKEA children's section. And it's like the one where like where there's roads and buildings on it so you can like drive your car. And it's just delightful. And sometimes the cats sit on it and it's like, oh no, they are causing a traffic jam. They're Godzilla. And it's just very delightful. That's
amazing.
It.
Amazing. My beef is it's been so fucking hot. On the west coast of the United States, it has been in the hundreds every day.
Yucky.
Which is, it was 110 the other day and I looked it up. I think that's 37 Celsius. The other day I was outside for maybe 15 minutes total, but it was 110 degrees. And so I was so sweaty. It was bad. Shout out to air conditioning and shout out to the state of California for messaging us every day saying, please conserve energy so that the entire grid doesn't go down.
Yikes.
Yeah. No, I got a message one time that was like, please don't do laundry until the morning.
oh, no.
And they're like, between 4 and 9, please maybe don't turn your AC up as high as you want to. Otherwise, you will lose power. That's my beef. My juice is I got star stickers, like the little stickers that you would get in school on
for children.
For children. And for Namjoon month, because it is Namjoon and Jungkook's birthdays this month in September, of BTS, of course. And they're both swole. They both work out. And I was like, Namjoon month is Sarah working out month. Because I haven't worked out in ages and it's bad for my mental health.
But then it made your butt hurt.
Well, we're getting there. But I bought I have my old my calendar, like a real paper calendar, and I got stickers that I can put them on the days that I worked out as a little reward for myself because I'm a baby. It did make my ass and my thighs and my inner thighs and my whole legs and my calves sore. They're still sore. It's been 3 days. It's still sore. Sometimes I walk like an old woman. It's pretty rough. But you know, we live and we learn. That's all. You can tell us about your beef, your juice, your favorite part of Sharonda J. Brown's book.
Yes, please.
On our social media at SoundsFakePod. I would also recommend following Sharonda on Twitter.
Yes. And also reading their other writing. I don't know that they have any other books, but they have quite a few articles.
They are at Sharonda J. Brown. Get it.
There you go.
Get that full name. Sharonda, SHERRONDA, J. Brown. Highly recommend following. Sometimes their tweets come up on like my Stan Twitter account, like because other people have liked them. And I'm like, oh my God.
I know them. Famous.
Yeah, you should follow Sharonda. Also, enter our book giveaway. If you would like to support us on Patreon, that's also a thing you can do. Patreon.com/soundsfakepod. Our $5 patrons who we are promoting this week are Catherine, Bailey, Kelly, Layla, Lily, and Livy. What a tongue twister. Our $10 patrons who are promoting something this week are David J., who would like to promote Emergent Strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown, David Nurse, who would like to promote Sharonda J. Brown's book, Derek and Carissa, who would like to promote The Overthrow of Heteronormativity, specifically white cis heteronormativity, which, I mean, it all goes together, let's be real. Cinnamon Toast Punch, who would like to promote Rainy Walks with Friends and Splashing in Puddles, and my Aunt Jeannie, who would like to promote Christopher's Haven. Our other $10 patrons are Arkness, R.E.K., Benjamin Ibarra, Changeling, and Alex the Ace Cat. And because Alice the Ace Cat can read, Alice the Ace Cat will be reading this book. Alex is literate, and we've established this. Other $10 patrons are Maggie Capello, Martin, Giselle, Maddie, Potato, Purple Haze, Rosie Costello, Barefoot Backpacker, The Steve, and Circle Teo. Our $15 patrons are Andrew Hillam, who would like to promote the Invisible Spectrum podcast, Click for Caroline, who would like to promote Ace of Hearts, Thea Chappelle, who would like to promote twitch.tv/MelodyDia, Hector Murillo, who would like to promote friends that are supportive, constructive, and help you grow as a better person, Kezia Root, who would like to promote people who come into your life for a small time but when you need them, Nathaniel White, who would like to promote NathanielJWhiteDesigns.com, Kayla Zantanina, who would like to promote at KateMaggart.art, and Sarah Jones, who is at Eternal Lolly Everywhere. Our $20 patrons are Sabrina Hogg, Merry Christmas, and Dragonfly. Dragonfly would like to promote, I'm trying to think of something new. I already said the book.
Me Going to Sleep. I'm so sleepy.
Dragonfly would like to promote Kayla Going to Sleep. Thanks for listening. Buy Sharonda's book. Also, maybe get ours while you're at it. SoundsFakePod.com/book.
Why not?
Thanks for listening. Did I already say that? Doesn't matter. Tune in next Sunday for more of us in your ears.
And until then, take good care of your cows.